Good morning. You're tuned to 3CR, 8:55 AM, 3CR Digital, and streaming at 3cr.org.au. Right now, we're bringing you some recordings from the International Human Rights Day and end of year celebration of PASA, the Philippines Australia Solidarity Association, alongside Migrante, Gabriela, Anat Bayan, and the Advanced League of People's Artists Melbourne. This was recorded at the Seddon Scout Hall on Wurundjeri country and features Lydia Thorpe and Sister Patricia Fox. So first up, you'll hear PASA co-chair Andrew Morrison introducing Lydia.
We'll hear from Lydia Thorpe, who will speak on treaty and other related matters. Sister Patricia Fox will then speak next and tell us about both the current situation in the Philippines and her recent experience being thrown out of the Philippines. To introduce Lydia Thorpe, as I mentioned earlier, a strong woman, important leader and spokesperson for Aboriginal people, particularly in Victoria. Lydia was the first female Aboriginal elected to Victorian Parliament, a member of the Greens, proud Gunai Gunditjmara woman, has been campaigning for some time now on treaty in Victoria, advocating for a treaty that was originally, I guess, envisaged, or the language was clan-based treaty. I understand now 38 nations is more what we're talking about. So I'll hand over to Lydia. Please give a warm round of applause for this talk.
Thank you, Andrew, and thank you to PASA for inviting me here today. I feel very honoured to be part of the gathering around human rights. So to share in your story of struggles and survival and to talk about some of the breaches of human rights that still exist in this country and to highlight the continued injustice against my people is what I'll be talking about today. And before I do that, I too would like to pay my respects to the Wurundjeri people, the Kulin of the Kulin Nation, who've survived genocide, who've survived assimilation, and who've maintained their culture and their country and their language for thousands and thousands of generations. If you consider almost every culture in the world, there have been some great injustices experienced by people at the hands of their governments. And this is something that unites us all. It is something we can all reflect on and use to inspire us to create a better world of peace, equality, fairness, and respect for one another. To reflect on human rights of people's struggle and survival, we, the Aboriginal people, the first people of this country, have the oldest living known culture in the world. Aboriginal people have lived on this land for over 65,000 years. Before invasion and colonisation, thousands of clans lived on this land. They spoke hundreds of different languages. Each had their own traditions, dances, spirituality, art, and territories. In 1770, Captain Cook said this land was empty and he classified us as wild beasts. Through massacres, poisonings, and the spread of blankets with smallpox, Aboriginal people were almost wiped out by the British. At invasion, the Aboriginal population was estimated at up to 1.5 million people. And by the 1900s, it was estimated at just 100,000. This is the fundamental injustice that Australia is founded on. That the lie that this land was uninhabited by people. Aboriginal people have never ceded sovereignty of this land. We never signed any agreement with the British for them to set up governments here. Aboriginal people were tortured here. They were chained up by the necks and treated like animals. Our men were forced to work on farms as slave labour. The British colonisers massacred Aboriginal people with complete disregard. There are hundreds of massacre sites across the country, and many more will no doubt be revealed. Our culture and our human and civil rights were and continue to be oppressed. My people were taken from their homelands, rounded up onto prison camps, which are now called reserves, where many died from European diseases and ill treatment. We were forced to adopt British culture, dress, and Christian religion. Every attempt was made to wipe out our culture, and it was assumed that the rest of us would just die off. And unfortunately, after all this time, the underlying injustice of this country has remained. Australia is the only Commonwealth country in the world that does not have a treaty with its First People. Today, Aboriginal people make up just a few percent of Australia's population. But we are survivors and we are continuing the journey to rebuild our culture. We have started to discuss a treaty. A treaty is a negotiated agreement, often a peace agreement, between two sovereign peoples. Under the United Nations Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, Aboriginal people have the right to self-determination and to compensation for the wrongs against us. It is our right, as the first and sovereign peoples of this land, to have self-governance of our own affairs, to economic independence, and to land. Only through proper treaty processes can Aboriginal people heal and have these rights, resources, and land restored. We have to deliver real benefits for grassroots Aboriginal communities. I believe that all communities, including the Philippine community, can have a role in supporting this change. You can spread understanding amongst our community, your community, about our past, the true history of this country, about Aboriginal people's continued struggle and the need for treaties. You can write letters and stand with us to show politicians your support for justice for Aboriginal people, including stopping Aboriginal deaths in police custody and prisons, stopping the removal of children from our families. In Victoria, we have 2,000 of our children that have been taken from their families and put in out-of-home care. That is 2018, today. We need to stop the continued destruction of our country, where our bush is being logged at a rate of 5 mcgs per day with no consent of the sovereign people of that land. We're the only state in the country that have not compensated our stolen generation members, and this government can afford to do that. We budgeted it in the parliamentary budget process that you go through as part of a system that, you know, parties go through to decide what they're spending their money on and what their priorities are. And with only a few stolen generation members that are left, this government can afford to pay each of those members out before they die off. And we're also calling for all 38 nations to be represented on the new body for treaty in this state. The government have dictated to Aboriginal people so far what the treaty should look like, and they've chosen 11 nations out of 38 to sit on the representative body. So we're fighting to ensure that 38 nations, 38 language groups that exist, still exist today, are at the table as part of this process. And we're also calling for a truth and justice commission like the one in South Africa. We've never had one in this country. And we need that to address all the wrongs committed against our First People. So I invite you all to walk with us on the 26th of January and call for a day of mourning for our people. It's not a day of celebration for us. It represents massacres, it represents loss of land, and we invite you all to walk with us. So let's stand together in solidarity and continue the fight against injustice and for real human rights for all. Thank you.
We just heard from Lydia Thorpe speaking at an International Human Rights Day event organised by the Philippine Australia Solidarity Association that happened yesterday in Sedan. And next up we'll hear another PASA co-chair, May Kostakis. She'll be introducing the second speaker, Sister Patricia Fox.
Sister Pat need little introduction. I think because since she arrived here on November 4, she has been on the media, both on television and radio, advocating for human rights in the Philippines and supporting the struggle of the Filipinos for just and lasting peace. Sister Pat left Australia in 1990 as a missionary to the Philippines. She chose to live with the poor people in the rural areas and even in the mountains with the indigenous Filipinos. There, she witnessed the hardship of the people and the cause of their poverty. With Sister Pat's conviction as a Christian missionary, she could not help but to get involved with projects to uplift their livelihood, to advocate for their rights to land, peace, justice, and security, all universal human rights, which the Church sees as integral to her mission. President Duterte does not like activists and human rights advocates in the Philippines, whether they are Filipinos or foreigner, and consider them as enemies of the state. They are subject to intimidation, harassment, illegal arrest and detention, and even killings. Sister Pat was considered an undesirable alien and ordered to be deported. In October, Sister Pat, together with human rights advocates and supporters all around the world, lost their battle to let Sister Pat stay in the Philippines. The Bureau of Immigration did not renew her visa, which expired September, and the Department of Justice denied all appeals. Sister Pat decided then to come back to Australia before she got physically deported. Now she is here and continues her fight with us for just and lasting peace and human rights. So let us all welcome Sister Pat to share with us her experience in the Philippines.
Good afternoon and thank you for the invitation. And I was thinking, this is 70 years since the Declaration of Human Rights. When you listen to Lydia and the experiences we have, it's a long way from being put into practice. We acknowledge the first owners of the land, but what are we doing here to make sure that that honouring becomes a reality? So I just think there's a lot to do with this 70 years of Human Rights Declaration, even though it had problems. And in the Philippines, it's just getting further and further and further away from any principles of human rights. It's just, human rights are just almost they're non-existent now in the Philippines. Just recently, a friend, Ray Casambre, and his wife, Cora, who are both senior citizens, were arrested and charged with murder, attempted murder, possession of firearms. And this is what's going on all the time. And Ray belonged to the Philippine Peace Centre and was active in trying to push the peace talks between the government and the National Democratic Front of the Philippines, which was supposed to address the root causes of poverty, the agrarian reform, rural development, and national industrialisation. Now, Ray is himself now and his wife have been arrested. And I suspect there used to be an interagency legal action group whose whole role was to work on trumped-up charges. Now, it was disbanded in the time of Arroyo when Philip Alston, one of the rapporteurs, came across and criticised it. But it's been renewed under the president. And I suspect that Ray, who spoke out about that group, is now become one of the victims of this interagency with the trumped-up charges, as have a lot of the other peace negotiators. Whereas he promised to continue the peace talks, they're getting further and further away. And now, like, there's martial law. He's declared martial law in Mindanao, and it's been extended. And now on Tuesday, they're talking about extending it again. The reason supposedly was there was ISIS in Marawi, in Mindanao. There were about 30 Ma'uti, a clan of Ma'uti, who were having almost a tribal war there. And that was another person from ex-Abu Sayyaf. This is what started it all off. There are 1,000 killed, over 1,000 killed now, and they're mostly civilian. It wasn't anything to do with the ISIS, but unfortunately the Australian government has bought into that angle, and there are Australian soldiers over there training Filipino soldiers who are brutal and not respecting any human rights at all. In terms of the indigenous peoples there, what is happening is the so-called development model is really pushing mining and the expansion of plantations. And there's a plan to have 1.5 million hectares of plantations to expand it. Now, any expansion of plantations or any mining always affects either the indigenous peoples or the farmers. And so a lot of what they're doing is organising to defend their land. And they are being killed, they are being arrested, and they're being displaced. And when I was in Mindanao on a fact-finding, tribal people from Kalingod, which is up in the mountains, had just arrived. Their land has gold. And what was happening now is they've been militarised for ages. But under this regime now, they were told by the military, they all either joined the Alamara, which is a paramilitary group armed and trained by the military, who are brutal and commit horrific crimes, horrific murders. So they either had to join that or they belonged to the New People's Army. There was no in between. Now, these are indigenous people who just want to be on their ancestral lands, practicing their culture, their religion, their way of life, their livelihood. They had to leave their lands and they went up into the mountains hoping that it would be demilitarized, but it wasn't, and they had a food blockade. So they had to walk 5 days down to the lowlands to tell people what's happening in their land, because they are refusing to give up their land. And one of the promises when Duterte came in was he would disband paramilitary and allow them to go back to their lands, and it isn't happening. And especially the schools. There are a series of indigenous schools that they worked hard to set up in the mountains, and it's the first time their parents, their grandparents never had a chance for education. They set up. Some of the ones that have graduated have become teachers. The teachers are volunteers, very committed young people. These he's threatening to bomb. Some have been burned. Military have taken over some of them. And so the kids have had to move out. So they've got this Save Our Schools movement now. Some are down in the lowlands. Some have come to Manila because the young people are now becoming very confident in speaking out and saying, this is what's happening and we demand the right to education, which is a basic right. But the threats continue on these young school kids. The farmers are being massacred. Before I came here, I was involved in an agricultural workers' union, and one of our programs was particularly with sugar workers, because there's a period when sugar workers don't have work And so we were encouraging them to go onto a portion of the haciendas and plant food crops. And this group in Negros, in Sagay, did just that. And they actually had the permission of the person who was the overseer. Now, they were massacred by a paramilitary group one night. 9 of them died, 3 women, 2 minors, because just for planting food. And the president has now made the statement, if any more farmers go onto the land and plant food crops, I'll have them arrested, and if they resist, I'll have them killed. So it just basic right to plant food is being taken away from the farmers. Part of my problem with the president was on the fact finding in Mindanao, I was invited to go and speak to some Coca-Cola workers who had been arrested and were having a press conference. Now, again, the situation of the workers is they are employed by a contractor who contracts them to the principal, which is actually illegal under the Philippine law, but that's how it works. Now, these workers had been working 10, 12 years. The wages were low. They had no benefits. They had no holiday pay. They organised and asked to dialogue with the Coca-Cola management. They were put off the next day, the contract cancelled. So they picketed outside the factory and they were brutally broken up on the orders of the president's daughter, Sarah, and 10 of them arrested and kept in jail for 5 days. The prisons there are becoming more and more overcrowded. When they were released, they wanted to hold a press conference, and I happened to be down there, and so they asked me to go, and they asked me if I would say something. So basically I said, what's in the Philippine Constitution and what's in the social teachings of the Catholic Church? That workers have the right to unionise, the workers have a right to regularisation, workers have a right to a decent wage. Now, when I was arrested by the Bureau of Immigration Agents a week later, that turned out to be illegal and anti-government to say those things. So, I mean, even the basic rights under their own constitution, let alone international things, are now illegal. So nothing's respected along that. And then you would have heard of the so-called drug war. And, I mean, over 20,000 people now have been killed in this so-called drug war. And they are all urban poor people living in very poor things, often with no jobs or low salaries. Some have taken drugs, some haven't. Because there's a quota. The police have a quota and they get paid to fill their quota. So if they haven't filled their quota, they fill it. Anyone can be on the drug list. If I don't like you, I go to the barangay captain and say you're on the drug list. Fortunately, 2 police have just been convicted for killing a young fellow, 17-year-old Kian. Now, the barangay captain said to one of the bishops that the police didn't coordinate with her, so she hadn't turned off the CCTV cameras. So clearly what's happening is they notify the barangay turns off the cameras, the police kill whoever they're going to kill, then they turn the cameras on when it's over. I mean, so it's just systemic, this whole killing. And the people are frightened. But the good part is there are relatives coming together now in a group called Rise Up and starting to support each other and speak out. But a lot of people are frightened. The trumped-up charges with Ray and his wife are not unusual. Again, we discovered that there are over almost 500 political prisoners. When I went to Mindanao again, we went to visit one of the jails, and there were talk to the political prisoners there with the permission of the warden. Now, 5 of them there were for Farmers Association, 2 women and 3 men, indigenous people who were going to a barangay to organise and explain to the people about an expansion of a plantation into their area. They were stopped by the military, their identification taken, their bags taken away from them. About 2 hours later, a military truck arrives with a sack of rice, and they're all charged with possession of explosives. And they're still in the jail. And one of them has children, one of them's a 60-something-year-old woman. And this is not unusual. This is what's happening all the time to the organisers. And the problem now is also the organisers, the people who are working for their rights, which are guaranteed under all the international conventions and under the Constitution usually, now the ones that are actually defending them are also being killed. I have friends who are arrested and they're in jail for trumped-up charges. The lawyer who was defending them was also defending the people who were charged with the murder in the Negros case that I said about the massacre, because it was a program of the National Federation of Sugar Workers, and they charged a couple of the leaders for murdering them. It was all set up. But that same lawyer was killed shortly after that. Another lawyer who was helping me and works for human rights and also was defending Hill Boehringer when he wasn't allowed into the country. She has been charged with kidnapping and illegal detention because one of the children from that massacre in Negros was taken to the police station. No parents, no lawyer present, made to sign a statement that it was the New People's Army that killed the people. The police then said that the New People's Army was the same as the National Federation of Sugar Workers. Now, this boy had no one sign because he's frightened. When Kathy, the attorney, went to get the child back from the police, she had the mother with her, they signed all the papers. They go back to Manila and she's got these charges against her. So this is what's going on now, that the situation there is getting worse and worse. There is absolutely no respect for human rights. At the last State of the Nation address, President Duterte said he respects human life but not human rights. Now, basic human right is the right to life, and that's been taken from a lot of people illegally. And what I've been also saying is a lot of the Australian mining companies in Indigenous lands particularly, and they are making use of the paralegal groups trained by the army, and the Australian government is training the armed force, people in the armed forces of the Philippines. And I think we have to Australian and say, why are we doing that when this army is totally violating every human right you could think of? But when I came from Canberra, both parties are committed to it. So I think as Australians we have a lot to look at here, and also in places like the Philippines, of what our role is and how we can be in solidarity with all those whose human rights are being abused at present. So thank you.
Welcome to the Dark Ages. You're tuned to 3CR. We hope you enjoyed those two speeches with Sister Patricia Fox and before that Lydia Thorpe. Thanks so much to the Philippine Australia Solidarity Association and Migrante, Gabriela, Anat Bayan and the Advanced League of People's Artists for letting us record that event. And thanks so much to the speakers, Lydia Thorpe and Patricia Fox. And the music you heard on the show was recorded at the event as well, and it's called Rage, originally performed by the Jerks, but that was Reagan from the Advanced League of People's Artists.
The names and the faces of the tyrants change, but poverty pains and murder remains. The voices of the truth are locked up in shame. Darkness remains, freedom in place.